heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor. Honor.
Our soul. Soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
Of a nation.
Of a nation.
Of a nation.
And now, Malcolm.
If there is a takeaway from election 2020, it's going to be this, people. We just don't trust each other anymore. Americans don't trust each other. And you know what else? There's just not a lot that unites us. And there really isn't. And that may not sound nice to some of you, but it is a fact indeed. And of course, it's hurtful, doesn't sound nice, but I don't see us as the United States of America anymore. I don't feel that's the way anymore. And it really is with these two political parties, what's taken place. And I'll explain a little more about that in just a moment here. But I see this as not, this is not an election as normal or business. I mean, these are really grandiose events that are changing the fabric of who we are. I think the distrust will only build from here on out. I don't see it coming back together right away. I don't know what it would take, probably another catastrophic event of some sort, I hate to say. Because the only thing that we can really think about that united us in recent times was 9/11, the catastrophic event that was, that brought us to our knees and stopped air travel, remember, in its moment, and kind of was a moment that froze us all. And it changed. It scarred our country in ways we hadn't seen in a very long, long time. Certainly our lifetimes, we had not seen that sort of a radical change. You know, I remember the days when you used to be able to just walk up onto a plane at an airport, and I had done it many times, very casual, nothing really to worry about. We were in the freest country on the planet. We're in America. We didn't have to go through all these security guards and pat-down searches and wands up your backside and, you know, all this kind of crap. It didn't even exist. Hell, I remember going to the islands before as a young lad and being able to take my luggage and run right out to the plane. Nobody ever stopped you. You know, I'd hardly ever be there on time. And it was never an issue. After 9/11, that all changed. It changed dramatically. And that was but we united at least as a people, and we came together for a period of time to know that we had a common enemy. It's one of the things that always through our history is when we've had a common enemy, we've been actually able to rally America. And, you know, it makes me think because President Trump, Donald Trump, ran against trying to, you know, get us out of these wars. And of course, the industrial military complex, they love those wars and the big government apparatus and keeps everybody gainfully employed and empowered as they push our brand of quasi-democracy around the globe, telling people that's what they got to have. And we've seen that as kids. We've seen that through a lot of the years. And they're just one war after the next. And many times we crossed the line and we started to, again, push our form of the way we do business on other countries, thinking it was best for everybody. And they were supposed to take our brand of whatever the hell we were selling. And then we get into nation building. We got into, and that's an argument we've been having for a long time in this country, the whole nation building argument. And of course, all the blood and treasure that goes out the door. And that's what Trump ran against. He railed against that because he's seen that as a businessman, that it was a fool's game for the most part. I mean, we really became the world's bitch. I mean, we fought all their wars. We paid for it all. We paid for it, people, with our blood, our kids' blood. And we paid for it with all the gazillions of dollars we've spent around the globe. And what do we get for it, really? What do we get for it? What do we have for it? We have a global environment, a one world government coming together sort of thing, all these big bureaucracies around the globe and less rights, less privileges here at home. So, you know, should really make you think now, you know, where are we at now with this election? I think this election yeah, is a real game changer for our nation. I don't have an easy way to say to you how we come back together again, because I'll tell you right now, as conservatives, we don't trust the left. We don't trust the rotten bastards as far as we can throw them, in plain English, okay? We just don't trust them. And you know what? They don't trust us either. And you've seen that distrust in the Democrat Party. I mean, you've seen the birth, they've become empowered, the socialist component, which is really a communist Marxist component, let's call it what it is. And you've seen that empowerment in Congress with the Ilhan Omars and the Rashida Tlaibs and the AOCs and the Bernie Sanders group there and all of that. And they've expanded their whole squad thing with more crazy people in Congress. But they're the loudest voices in that group. Whereas Trump was able to marginalize more of the right, the rhinos and those kind of quackpots, the Jeff Flakes and the Romneys, and he kind of marginalized them because the Trumpism and the MAGA movement told them to shut the hell up. We weren't going to put up with them. Think about it, right? Whereas the left, they're not at all able to marginalize the Looney Tunes. These people really have been empowered. And they've been empowered to swallow the party whole, which is why you can't recognize or see what the hell the Democrat Party looks like anymore. You don't recognize it. Nobody can. But this whole distrust has been building for a very, very long time. A lot of it started back there in the early days of a lot of the scandals with the Obama administration. But it really started even before that with the Bush administration. And how W was selling us out with big government, you know, the bailouts, the government bailouts, the auto bailouts, all the BS. That all started on Bush. You know, big money, big government, globalists. Let's all hold hands and sing in the sunlight. That's how you got Barack Obama to become empowered and come into office, and with his hope in change, because the country was in a very bad place and it wasn't feeling real good about itself. So that cancer already had started back then. And you can, again, as we say, dial it right back in through the Clinton and the early Bush administration. We've been on a wild path for some time. But it brought us to a really crescendo moment with the Barack Obama administration, the whole hope and change and the damage I think a lot of people would suggest he did to our country. But Ferguson, law and order, what had taken place? And so you started to see the early signs of that disruption where people felt it was okay to burn the city down. It was okay to vandalize. It was okay to, you know, bitch slap your neighbor and just totally violate the rule of law. Then it was okay to blame law enforcement for all of it. That became really, you know, in vogue. I mean, that was the thing. It was all okay. And we'd seen that time and time. We've seen that playing out in a lot of cities after that, in a lot of markets. It's when a lot of the distrust started, and it started to build. And then we had this Kaepernick kid come along and started kneeling and pissing all over our flag, right? And patriotism, what is that, right? What is that? And then they rallied around that. Then the media rallied around that. And that's when we really started to lose more in broad daylight, because we lost them a long time before then. But the media and the Fourth Estate, I mean, that became so apparent that they were, what? They were siding with these people? And then you see, you know, the whole rise of this Black Lives Matter movement, the Marxist group that they are, and the Antifa thugs and all of that BS, right? That all started to come out. And then burning more cities down, and law enforcement sucks, and defund the police, and patriotism, burn the flag. Who needs it, man? I mean, that's the United States of America? What is that? And you say, well, we don't trust each other. Well, no kidding, we don't trust each other. The distrust, people, has been building for some time, right into this election in 2020. Without something common to rally around, maybe if that's a group of aliens coming in from another planet and they land somewhere in Nevada somewhere, we can bitch and hem and haw and come together about them, or we go to war with China or Russia or North Korea or some other foreign entity and make the military-industrial complex happy and That's what it takes to, and then maybe we come together and, you know, I don't know what that means. Is that the commonality we're looking for, to have that spark and say, well, we kind of need each other. It's a real genuine wake up call to say that we don't trust each other. We distrust each other big time. We don't even kind of like each other. We're sort of like, and we look at each other as like, oh, that must be a liberal. That's gotta be a Biden lover. That's gotta be a Trump guy. That's a MAGA guy over there with the, you know, you remember, you couldn't wear the MAGA hat anywhere. They were going and putting their fist up in your face in restaurants, and that all, they've been doing this stuff right along. That distrust has been building and building through all these many years now. And so it was the kneeling on the flag, and, you know, we're not going to celebrate America anymore. We're not going to stand. We're going to go on our knees. We're going to, you know, that's what was happening. And people, you know, it was no longer isolated. Now you're seeing it coming to 2020. They're doing it across all sports. If you thought that was going away, every major sport now, they've got it in. They're kneeling, and they're just so disrespectful on what level of patriotism in America, and that somehow makes them feel good. The unity is gone. How we handle a crisis, how we handled COVID, big government, what you expect from government, free college and free healthcare and free food and free everything. I mean, you think about it for a moment, and we can draw a pretty picture of rainbows and unicorns and My Little Ponies, but people, I mean, there's a lot that divides us as a people. And they call Trump insane. My God, he's as common, cool, and collective on this side as you could possibly ask. And he marginalized those rhino people and the flakes, the plenty of those Jeff Flakes type. He marginalized those over there. So they really weren't empowered. The Paul Ryans, they all left like cockroaches in the middle of the night from Washington in the first 4 years. In the midterm, they were leaving by the droves, right into this election here. And you look at the down ballots, and you look at 2020 election, and the down ballot for Trump was very successful. It was an absolute red wave, people. No matter how you want to, I hate to use the term wave because it's trite. But it was a lot of momentum, you know, yeah. I mean, in the race that Trump did, but yet the guy at the top of the ticket didn't win at all. And then Americans are looking at it and say, what? We've seen all those rallies. We've seen what was going on. How can you say that? You mean the guy in the basement won it all? The guy who's running around, I mean, you never was asked a question, never, nothing with the media, you know, coming out with anytime there was a camera there in a moment of an opportunity, grabbing a mask quickly and putting a mask, oh, COVID, we're dying. Close down the cities, lock the restaurants down, lock everything down. I mean, isn't that what was going on? And then they don't ask him anything. And then the guy is, we've never seen a race of any kind. You couldn't run for dog catcher and go on that parade. And yet this guy's running for president. I mean, the powerful position, they say, I always love it when they say that, the most powerful position in the world, the most powerful country, the most, yeah, I'm not sure any of that's true. I mean, where's China's bitch? I mean, do we have the most powerful country? And is our president really the most powerful? I'm not buying it, people. Because if that was the case, Trump would be on top of this thing right now. He'd have thrown them all to the wolves. No, I think he really is a, you know, just another cog in the wheel. And the wheel just keeps turning. And it's not the wheel of fortune, people. It's a wheel of chaos and Marxists and just turns and turns and that's the kind of wheel we're looking at here. I have a lot of distrust for all of it, including big government and where we're at. And, you know, and I sound like an old babbling fool at this point. And, you know, and I think for those of you who know me, you know that I actually am an optimist. But it's, you know, when you see the cancer that is just out of control and spreading in the way that it is, you have to get loud. You have to draw a line and say something's wrong here. The distrust is, it's too much. And I don't know how we actually ever come together again. I'm honestly not really feeling it at the moment. And I don't see how that happens, quite honestly. Very little, if anything, that I can see that unites us. Without some common catastrophe crisis, we can all hang our hat on and say, well, we better go get together and win this thing back because we're at war. And that's kind of all that we got in common. What else do we got in common? There really is nothing else, people. And without some other catastrophe hitting us, there's not much that unites Americans anymore. I'm here to tell you. Yeah. Well, listen, I got Professor Larry Bell coming on the program today, and he's got an interesting article out as well about kind of some of what I'm talking about, but really this head shaker of an election and why we are so divided. And I don't see this being an easy game to get us back together again. And it's like we want to take our toys and leave the party, you know? And it really does become the tale of two countries. Or at least one country that is vastly divided and maybe needs to become something different. We're at that sort of revolutionary moment, aren't we now? I mean, it's kind of where we're at there. Anyways, let's pick it up there. We'll take a pause here, be back with more Voice of a Nation in just a moment.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, healthycell.com/sleep.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. But we are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
It's been building for a very long time. You know, at one time, the flag used to bring Americans together. We could rally around the flag. We could rally around the fact that we took pride in government. We took pride in what we have built here in our country. We also united with, as I said to you, with the rule of law. There was a mutual respect for the rule of law. I mean, we had some, we might have had some differences, but not to the level of what we have now. And then even how we handle a crisis right now. And then you see all this falls into the public square on an election. So I think one of the things I'm asking myself is what really does unite us as Americans? I mean, what is it anymore? I mean, I haven't seen anything since 9/11, really, where we could rally around a unique cause or something that would say, well, this is something we have to battle against, something we can come together for. I'm just not seeing that anymore. And when you go through all of these things and what's taking place here, I mean, let's face it, the left don't trust the right and the right does not trust the left. There's two different views of America they have. The red America and the blue America are far different today. It's hard to find that mutual space in the middle anymore. It doesn't really... We're not finding that common ground. We're at odds in a big way. when you see the amount of people that have distrust in the election. We're talking some pretty big numbers here, registered voters that say, listen, we don't think these elections were free and fair. Now, you have one side. I mean, they want to suggest it does, the left, the blue America, that sure, they want to believe it's all fear, but even some of them don't. But the vast majority of them do believe that this was OK because their guy, according to the media, has won. So they've anointed him as the president. So they're OK with that. But you look at the vast majority of American and there will always be that distrust, I believe. And I have a sense this isn't another this is not another Bush Gore moment at all. This is going to have a long, long scar, a very, very deep, deep, deep scar on the nation. I don't see how this heals. This is not one of these light bruises. You get over and it heals in a week or two and we get over it. We look forward to the next election when we kick your backside again. Okay, cool. You know, that's kind of how it was in the day, but not so much now. So anyways, I think there's a lot of food for thought there. Let me bring on here Professor Larry Bell with us. And, you know, Larry's got a really very good piece and article up on the platform there. And many Americans distrust election results and for good reasons, you say, Larry, there. Now, Larry's he's a columnist writer at Newsmax and he's a weekly writer here at America Out Loud. Larry, let me start with a couple of the opening remarks I say. Now, this Politico Morning Consult poll, which you reference in your piece, 70% of Republicans say they didn't believe the 2020 election was free and fair. And a little more than 10% of Democrats doubted as well. But that's just not enough. I mean, the vast majority of people on the left, they're OK with it because they believe their guy won. But, you know, and a lot of this, the poll goes on to say 78% believe that mail-in voting led to widespread voter fraud. Of course, this was all predicted early in the year. It was predicted this was going to be a problem. We heard the president many times come out on this. 72% believe that ballots were tampered with, you know, and 84% it benefited Joe Biden. So you look at that poll right now, there's a distrust in this country, Larry, that is pretty deep seated here. What do you get out of that poll? And not going to be an easy fix, is it?
No, Malcolm. And again, thank you for having me on. I always enjoy our conversations. I'd like to go back to your intro comment and that we say that America is divided. And clearly that's the case. Yeah, clearly very divided. And that we look at the center and we say, well, what is that? What is that connection? What is that? That area where we agree. And I think probably a lot of this gets confused by the fact that we're talking about partisan political divisions that I think are, on one hand, we see that the conservative side is clearly very united. And I think most of them can really articulate what they believe in and what we believe in. I'll include myself in that. It has to do with, you know, with old things like patriotism and the flag, but it's beyond that. It's appreciating, you know, America and appreciating the freedoms we have and the Constitution and really the opportunities that everyone has to improve their lives and so on. And I think we see that very much in the Trump rallies, for example. We see just these enormous turnouts of people, even when Trump was, even after the election, when it appeared that Trump was defeated, and we saw people turning out just in really appreciation and respect for him and so on. So here I think we see half the country united around some common goals, common values, common principles that can be articulated. I would argue that on the other side, if you were to say, well, what does that other half, if it's a half, believe in? What can it articulate? And I think that you would find that throughout the whole campaign process, former Vice President Biden and his group was able to skate through the whole campaign without articulating what they believe in.
Right.
Because I think if you were to ask him and if he were to answer Well, what about the Green New Deal? And what about so many of these issues that defund the police and so on? The Black Lives Matter and Antifa, or you fought on. What is your position on these things? They were able to skate on them. No, these are not issues that half the country would subscribe to. I would submit that a very small percentage of the public would subscribe to. And the campaign was really about not being Trump because of his tweets or personality, but in terms of being able to articulate a uniting ideology or belief core system. I didn't see it there. So in that regard, I think the good news is that, if there is some, is that I think we saw at least half of the country united around some principles that perhaps they were realizing they had forgotten to give full respect to in the past. And they saw these principles threatened by something which is really, it is really socialist, ideology and Marxist philosophy that have failed everywhere else. And they saw, the right saw this as a very real and ominous threat. So in that regard, that's why I wanted to sort of comment on your intro that mm-hmm. we have two separate ideologies right. that are competing with each other that are relatively equally balanced. And I would say, no, we have one set of core principles that we're united about. And we have another party that is basically being driven by, I think, a rogue group within them mm-hmm. that has gained strength and gain control.
Yeah.
And that is where we stand today.
Yeah. You know, I was going to, when you started putting your case out there, I was going to almost push back and I said, no, let me see where you're going. And I probably agree more with you in the sense that the right is, there is a uniting within the two core groups. You're right. You know, at first I was thinking, Larry, well, they're really not as united in the right either within the Republican Party. But, you know, I started thinking more because I was thinking about the rhinos and I was thinking about the people have really been in the face of, been a such a challenging for President Trump to, littered throughout his administration, Larry, as you know, have been these little time bombs and a lot of these rhino, whatever you want to call them, but these Republicans in name only. I mean, and you can go a lot further with that as well. But actually, when you really think about the rhinos and you think about some of those people that are is not as loyal to the conservative movement as the conservatives would like to have, because the Republican Party has sold out conservatives more than once. That's been my biggest gripe and bitch has been they don't always embrace the conservatism ideology as much as we'd like them to. But actually, when you look at the rhinos and those kind of people, you know, I mentioned up front things like patriotism, the flag, the respect for the rule of law, how we handle a crisis. We're probably more united on those fronts than the left is within that that ideology now. Now, we're not united in the role of government. There are all those people like the Romneys and the Ryans, and there's a whole bunch of those people. They love big government. They're all over the place in Washington. Quite frankly, even people like Mitch McConnell love big government. It's empowering for them. It's like a high. It's like a drug. And they all seem to love that. So, but we do unite within certain things and patriotism. Whereas the left, I started to see the rumblings, Larry, of the fact that they were so disrespected and pissing all over our flag and kneeling all over everything at the football game some years back when that all started. But then the rule of law started to be questioned all the way back in, back to Ferguson and then through the Obama administration and Fast and Furious and all the scandals through that. And you know what I'm saying? So it is interesting, but the real argument here is as a country goes, Larry, red and blue, I've come to the conclusion we're so far apart. It's unnerving. It's a bit scary and frightening. And I don't see how we ever come together again. I think we are looking at really two different countries here. And I hear people sometimes say that, but I don't think the uniting and bringing the country back together like when you were a young guy, I don't think that happens anymore. We've come too far down the road. What do you say to that?
Well, I think, I guess I would counter it to one, in one regard, is that when we look at the origins, the early time of Trump coming into, and when he came down the escalator and so on, you know, Trump has a way of quite creatively making a lot of people angry.
He pisses people off. Let's call it what it is.
But the point is that you look at the change. I think that, you know, those that were really, I think the rhinos you're talking about have been really marginalized by the Trump movement.
They have.
You look at the, you look at the unity today.
That's true.
You know, the reason you had the Ryans and you had the, you know, some of the others getting, you know, the Romneys and so on getting so much publicity was because the media gave it to them. You know, anything that was anti-Trump, of course, was shown by the media as indication that Trump had lost his base. Well, quite the contrary. I think we're even seeing now, more recently, where Romney is now realizing he better go along with his party, or he'll be historic toast even faster than he realized. So I think when you see the huge percentage of Republicans supporting Trump, and you saw evidence of that in the policies, which again makes the election tally so suspect, is that the left and the media have been putting out this narrative that it was going to be this blue wave and so on, and we saw quite the opposite, that it was a disaster in terms of the both the state level elections and the national elections, in terms of state houses and houses and senates and so on. It didn't turn out well at all, which I think spoke very well for the belief that the policies were successful, and there were measurable successes in terms of pre-COVID, you know, employment and the economy and people having a sense that they were better off, and we saw it reflected in the minority votes. We saw it reflected in the Hispanic votes, both dealing with the Cuban issues in Florida, but we also saw it in the border states in Texas, where the Hispanic community supported Trump. So I think we saw a great unification of the conservatives. I think now I think there's going to be, and I predict there will be, buyer's remorse if Biden gets in, or in any case with the Congress, if any of his policies get enacted. If we see the, you know, what happens with the Green New Deal in terms of its impact on energy costs, and when you have incandescent light bulbs and electric cars, EV cars pushed down our throats, you know, and all these other kind of control mechanisms. I think people are getting very tired now of shut-ins because of COVID, where basically, you know, the evidence of efficacy is very scant, and people want to get their kids back in school and so on. So I think the buyer's remorse, where they say, now, what is it exactly we voted for here? Was it for riots in the streets and every time there's a controversial defense of a part of a policeman shooting someone, or any other perceived injustice? I think this is going to invade the psyche of the suburban America that thought they were immune from the exodus from cities of criminality and economic decline. So I see this as an enormous wake-up call. And in that regard, the question is it in time? You know, have we awakened in time? Are we awakening in time? Do things have to go so terribly badly before the Democrats wake up and realize what they bought into? And I'm still optimistic that we have time.
Yeah. Interesting. You say there, you got me thinking here again, Larry, when you talk about the rhinos and those kind of people being marginalized. You're so right with that group there, including the Jeff Flakes and the Bob Corkers and all that. But they were marginalized because the Trump fever was so impactful, so powerful, as you say. It was so robust. And, you know, these people, they had a hard time going against the momentum in the nation. So that's true what you say. Now, however, playing to what you're talking about right now, when you go to the blue ideology, those extremists over there on that side, they've not been marginalized. In fact, it's the opposite on the left, Larry. They've taken over the party. But now you make me think again when you say, well, do they buyer's remorse? And I've been thinking about that a bit and how far is too late. You know, oftentimes I say we have to sometimes step back before we step forward. Sometimes we've got to take a couple of steps back. And I've questioned that before. Are we at that point of the nation again? But then in my ear over here, I hear a lot of people and important people who tell me that, well, you know, we lose this now. And they've been saying this for some time. Like, I don't see how we come back from this again. Whereas there are people that see the glass half full, optimistic, and say, well, maybe the country will take a sucker punch to the gut. But at some point, it's going to have to realize that this is not the way we can function as a country. So could it be a good thing versus a bad thing? It's an arguable point. But the left, Larry, let's not forget, they're in power. That whole socialist, Marxist, communist movement in the left, and the fact that we can't recognize the Democrat Party today whatsoever. I mean, it's long gone from what we've seen. And that's where the danger is right now, where the rubber meets the road, when you see these people coming to power. And it really depends on what happens with Biden and his cabinet. And you see the kind of crazy people he's putting in there. It's the good old club from Obama's, legacy that he's bringing into power now. So I don't know. I mean, Larry, I honest to God don't know. I mean, I've had conversations just today and this morning with very interesting people who, you know, there are many who are giving up and thinking that the country is really it needs more than a wake up call right now. We're going too far down the yellow brick road. So whether or not it's an opportunity, I don't know. But the left and the right, we are so divided. And the left is not united like the right is within that circle. They're having a real power struggle in that group. Maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. But we're going to find out, aren't we, Larry?
Well, I think you're right. I think when we look at, if we kind of shift our perspective now and just look at the stage, and let's say we have a Biden presidency, which I'm not bought into yet, but let's say that occurs, and you've got Biden who never has clarified who he is. I don't know that there's ever been a definition of who Biden is. It seems like he's kind of a windsock. He goes with whatever gains his interests or purpose.
Yeah.
But no, Biden has got he's inherited this really challenging situation. He's got, on one hand, he says he's going to come into office with something like 100 executive orders and so on. And you can only imagine what those are. And they'll have to do with energy and probably Iran and a whole lot of other things. These are not popular subjects for the country. And on one hand, where some of the congressional constituency is saying, look, we've got to stop using words like defund the police and socialism and that sort of thing, because it's alienating. We live in some of these states that don't buy this stuff. This is not a narrative they want to hear. This scares the hell out of them. And please stop that narrative. And then we hear the other side, and I think it's largely a fringe element that says, we're not going to shut up. We're gonna hold you. You know, we're the Bernie, AOC wing. You know, the Sanders,
and they're not backing off, Larry. They're not backing off.
And they're not going to. And they're not going to back off. So
keep pushing.
So here you got this. Yeah. You got Biden, and he's got Kamala nipping at his heels. You know, and everybody's taking bets on how many months Biden stays in office before
That's right.
something bad happens to him. I don't mean. you know, I don't mean assassination, but I think maybe a political assassination. So he's inherited now. He's got the virus. He owns COVID. He owns North Korea. He owns all of these issues that he owns the Middle East. All of these things that he's been able to dodge, he owns them now. And he's got one hand of the party that's been running scared as hell in 2022 because they want to retain their congressional seats. And then he's got the other side that's hell bent to push their agendas. So like you say, we don't have a unified right. I think we've had the right has been able to avoid clarifying what do they really stand for. What is it to be a Democrat today? And I think if you were to ask a lot of traditional Democrats or even previous Democrats, you know, is this party your party? I would guess that very few would say, yes, it's my party. I don't recognize it anymore today. Mm-hmm. And so in that regard, that, you know, again, my question is, and this is kind of an ancillary question, should Biden want a Republican Senate to give him cover? Because he can then advocate and say, well, yeah, I'm supporting the radical wing of my party.
Interesting.
But those mean Republicans, so those resistors, you know, interesting switch of words.
Yeah.
Where resistors become the Republicans, say, well, they won't let me pass these appointments. They won't let me pass these appointments that supported Crossfire Hurricane. Hmm. And we're in the middle of the Hillary email scandals. You know, and these bad old Republicans just won't let me get these things through. My God, you know, I really wanted to support you, Bernie, and I wanted to really follow through in the manifesto that we signed together.
Yeah.
But the Republicans. So I think there's also an attitude, a theory, at least that I would give some credence to, that Biden's worst fear is that the Democrats get the Senate.
Wow, Larry, you really make me think there. That's interesting, because they're having such disputes within their family on the left, as you say. And even when you ask the question, you know, what is it to be a Democrat today, or what do you really stand for? That would be an interesting, question survey in a big way to ask all Democrats. And I think you wouldn't get that unity. It would be totally a mess, because I don't think they know what the hell they're for anymore. They're so far left. They're so far gone from the parade. Now, I don't think they can see or understand. Interesting how you say cover for Biden. You know, the far extreme left, the communist Marxist group of the Democrat Party, which is very loud and very obnoxious, and different than the right, Larry. They've not been marginalized. They've been empowered. Let's just look at that a minute here. This is really fascinating. So the crazy people on the left, they've been empowered. They're like blistering hot, and they're like demanding, we want this. We got your ass in office, Biden. You're going to do what we want, blah, 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 blah. Yet on the right, those people on the far right, again, those have been, you're right, they have been marginalized. And you could argue they'll probably stay that way for a while, because I'll tell you this, Larry Bell, no matter what happens, Donald Trump is not going away anytime soon. You know that.
The orange man is going to be there to haunt them one way or another. And he's going to be either a king and queen maker, and or somebody's going to scare them, and he's going to rise from the cave, in 2024. He'll be the savior that'll come in. And so that's going to scare the hell out of them. And I think we're going to have an awful lot of people running scared, a lot of congressional. You know, you had Pelosi with lockstep control of our party, and they were the Trump resistors and never Trump and resist, 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 impeach, impeach, impeach. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats got away with that with lockstep, so long as they felt they had control. But they've taken a heavy beating in this past election. And I think that this lockstep, you know, you question, and I shudder to think of the losing the Senate and having Kamala Harris be the tiebreaker on votes like eliminating the, you know, the filibuster and so on, and packing the court and packing the, you know, the Senate with new states and so on. But at the same time, I think there are going to be some, and I hope there would be some, and this is really worst case, that we have some Democrats, Manchin, others who say, look, I'm not going to fall on the sword on this stuff and vote for these things because I have a constituency that happens to be kind of purple. I'm not going to fall on the sword for this stuff. And I think increasingly Republicans are realizing they've got to start doing what the Democrats have been doing. You know, when Obama and Clinton had their appointments for cabinet positions, Republicans gave them to them. You know, there was very little resistance. And looking at the, the Democrats have attempted to stop Trump on every appointment, every decision. Look what they did to Kavanaugh. And so on. And there's a history of that.
Oh, yeah.
So now I think the Republicans are waking up and say, wait a minute. We're not going to rubber stamp your appointments. We're not going to let these crazy people get in. Maybe they better have to let them get in and let things get ugly really fast so that the reawakening, you know, occurs faster. But there's a dynamic that you mentioned here that we're at this really crazy time in history. We've never known a time like this.
That's right.
And it is kind of a civil war of you know, but it's not state against state. It's neighbor against neighbor. You know, it's metropolitan against suburban and exurban. It's your next door neighbor that has the Biden sign versus the Republican that doesn't have a sign for fear they have their car graffitied or their house graffitied. You know, it's not a shooting war, but it's a kind of war that's an ideological war, a war for over values and futures that this country's never known before. And God only knows how it's going to turn out. I'm optimistic because I think that there is. I think if you were to go to that core Democrat group and say, "What do you really believe in?"
Right.
They would find that they believe a lot more of what the Republicans are striving for than they do what the radical left is striving for.
Right.
I don't think this is a center-left country by any stretch.
Well, yeah, you know, but Larry, that's why we thought the 2020 election was a slam dunk, you know that, for America, because of what you just said. But, the argument that we're hearing, if all of this fraud and scandal, which you point out in your article quite a bit, is as real as it appears it is, then, you know, somehow they got away with it, the biggest heist in American history, you know, in ways that we never seen possible. You mentioned the Democrat, the more moderates, like the people like Joe Manchin of West Virginia. You mentioned these kind. There's, you know, you're right. There's a group of those within the Democrat Party that may not want to fall on that sword. They may not want to take that one for the team, especially when the team is going Marxist communist. That is another point to mention, Larry. That is a good point you bring up there. You say here in this piece here, this week's mention as well here, it's a good read. I encourage people to go read it. Many Americans distrust election results for good reasons. But you're so appropriate when you say here, Larry, that we are led to believe that Joe Biden was so popular among voters that his all-time record win triumphed over his party's devastating losses in local House and state legislative seats across the nation. And you get into various examples and stuff. And as you mentioned a little earlier here, how does a guy supposedly, so they suggest, that wins the most votes in history, I mean, than any presidential candidate ever, I mean, by far, and And a guy that doesn't even campaign, doesn't even come out anywhere, doesn't get asked a question. We don't even know what the hell his policies are. We don't even know other than, we hear the far left in there whining and screaming off their guts. But we've never seen anything quite like this, which kind of set this whole thing up to be like, this isn't real. There's no way he won that election. And that's kind of what you're suggesting in this article. Take a moment, and you have a whole bunch of examples here, but are you convinced? I mean, you tell me in your heart of hearts, you think Trump is the rightful winner of this election, or do you think that Biden is the rightful winner?
When we say rightful, I think it's a question of is it justifiable? And in that regard, I'm saying that look at the information that and this gets into another part of our, thinking or discussion. Mm-hmm. Look at the influence of the media and the corporatist influence, including Silicon Valley, in terms of that so-called justice. And you think, well, the Hunter Biden laptop information, the laptop from hell that implicated the Biden family and all these, kickbacks with foreign oligarchs and so on, and you look at that issue, the withholding of that information at a critical time when that might have influenced a lot of voters to say, well, gee, I thought Biden was this Mr. Nice Guy, but what about the Durham report that was supposed to come out that was going to reveal information on Crossfire Hurricane or the so-called Russian collusion, where they take some low-level attorney in the FBI, he takes the fall for it because they're going to squeeze him to go up the food chain to get the others, but that's not going to happen. That happens during a Biden administration, and you look at his cabinet appointments that he's putting out, they were all involved in the damn thing. Mm-hmm. Where's that going to go? Sure. You can try to give him indemnity. You can say, well, he's a special counsel, so it's going to be awkward to
that's
fire
what
him.
He just did. He just
but
did.
But you'll
that.
Bury. They'll still bury it.
Oh, it's all going to be buried. It's out, all buried. Yeah. No.
Yeah. By the time it comes out, the media will say, "Well, that's old news."
Oh, that's what they always do, Larry. They always do that. And that attorney you're talking about, the way I remember his name, Kevin Kleinsmith, that junior guy. So that was going to lead to something else. But I was just thinking this morning. You're so on it here. You're thinking here. But I was just thinking here this morning, Larry. We don't hear a darn word. We don't hear a piece of rumbling or a stitch of information or nothing. On Hunter Biden, the laptop. That's like the laptop from hell. That like disappeared off the face of the earth. You don't hear anything more about any of that. That whole story, because again, this is how the media has played it. I think that's going to be the story of this era, Larry, quite frankly. It's going to be how the media and the Fourth Estate deserted Americans.
Well, the media, it's more than a cliche to say that the media is really pushing this agenda. I used to be a fan of the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
And I see articles today that really, I'm not very happy about. They still have some good writers, but it's not that I think, of course we all think our own biases are right. I truly believe my biases are correct. I think when you write op-eds, what I do, I write opinion articles. You can't have an opinion without being biased. Okay. You can't. I think we're responsible for supporting our biases and supporting our views with facts, with compelling facts that we actually believe in ourselves.
That's right.
I think when we stop believing in what we're saying, then we're as crooked as anyone else. But if we look at the narratives that are being put out, mm-hmm. and they've got the corporatist influence and so on, and saying, well, there's this thing about the corruption of the elections and so on, that wouldn't swing the election. Well, there's a lot of issues there. It's a difference. For example, just taking the Dominion in Smartmatic systems, you can say, well, there's a question of, well, they were presented as being air gapped from the internet. Well, they aren't. Does that necessarily mean that they were hacked into by, say, China and these other countries they're talking about? Or all this stuff is nefarious. It would have swung the election. It doesn't, the question is, could it have happened or did it happen? Leaves a big question mark that's very difficult to prove in court. But when you take this, the example of, in Georgia, where you see by your lying eyes, you see ballots being taken from underneath the famous black table and counted when everyone else is chased out of the room. Well, do we know that who voted, what was in those ballots and so on? Do we know what was in the truck that pulled up in the back, about that time and so on? No, we don't. So the question is whether, and the big question is, was it fair in terms of swinging the election? Did it change the vote count enough, including the information that was omitted by the media? Did that affect the vote count enough to at least legitimately put Biden in the presidency? Or was this an entirely illegitimate process, an illegitimate result that was crafted long before the election, when they had the 600 lawyers going out and changing, the voting rules in the various states before COVID? You can't claim that was COVID, a COVID emergency. So when you look at the amount of organization that had to go into all of this nefarious stuff we're seeing, and then you say, well, was it a fair election? I would say, no, I'm not convinced it was a fair election. Second question, can we do anything about it? I don't know. Is it over? I don't know. Will the legislatures in these different swing states that apparently were targeted, where you have these legislators who are part-time people, they sell life insurance on the side or whatever, mm-hmm. They go one day, a few days a year to participate in government. Are they gonna have enough backbone?
No, we're already seeing that. The answer to that is no, and because they're just political appointees, most of these people, and they're so politicized. So it's got to get up to the Supreme Court, Larry. None of that's going to work on the local level.
So I don't think it was fair. I don't think it was a fair election, and but I can't predict that it's going to turn out one way or the other. But I think another question is, well, is it going to be different in Georgia? Mm-hmm. Where you have, Stacey Abrams going out and soliciting dead people.
That's right.
Is it going to be a repeat? Mm-hmm. Will that be another stolen election? And mm-hmm. with the stolen elections or attempts to, does this again energize Trump's base?
Yeah.
And if it does, is it too late?
Right. Well, there's a lot there, Larry, that you say. And I think the distrust is mutual. I mean, in your article there, you say that, many Americans distrust election results for good reasons, but I take it a step further, actually. I think many Americans distrust each other for all the reasons we're pointing out here right now, and which really is, we're so divided, but it's beyond that cliche. I mean, the distrust it's right there in your face. And it plays out here into the public square in ways that we haven't seen before. And it's because we don't have that commonality to unite around anymore. We've seen the erosion of that over time. We've seen that with the erosion of the law and order. We've seen that with the erosion of patriotism and the flag. And we've seen that with the erosion of our values. Our values are different now. Thank you, my fellow Americans, for being with me on the mission always. It's time to get involved and get loud.